This is James Throgmorton. Today I want to talk about Rebecca's boys, her two sons. If you'll remember, Rebecca is the wife of Isaac, and Abraham sent his servant back to his homeland to obtain a wife for Isaac. It's evident if you read the 24th chapter of the book of Genesis. You can see the story unfold, and you can see that Rebecca wasn't just the choice of her parents, but it was actually God's choice, and that God chose her for a specific purpose. In fact, in verse 29, when Rebecca is sent with Abraham's servant, this is what her family said. Her brothers, sisters, her mother says brothers, but I'm sure she probably had some sisters. We'll assume that she did. And they blessed Rebecca and said unto her, "You are our sister. Be you the mother of thousands of millions, and let your seed possess the gates of those which hate you." And after a period of time, Rebecca conceived, and she had twins. And if we'll look in chapter 25 of Genesis and verse 22, we'll see the dilemma that was involved with her, that the way she felt, and you can imagine how it was in her case, because it was something that was really unusual and abnormal. We'll use that word, abnormal. And the children struggled together within her. And she went to inquire of God. And, you know, that's a story in itself. God was personally available to some of these people to inquire. There's the story of Melchizedek down at Salem. And we won't get off on that subject, but anyway, the Lord said unto her, in verse 23, "Two nations are in your womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from your bowels, and one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." Now, that's an interesting statement, because it makes the statement here that God had already made the decision that the younger one would be wind up being the predominant one. That, if you would, the younger one would actually receive the birthright and the promises. And that's, you know, a lot of people might read this and say, well, that's unfair. But it was God's choice, and God knew what he wanted in a future servant, and he picked Jacob before Jacob was named. And let's skip down into verse 30 of chapter 24, because we want to build a case for these two people, the descendants of Jacob and the descendants of Esau. And anyway, Esau was born first, and Jacob had a hold of his heel while he was being born. The boys grew. They were different. Esau was a cunning hunter, it tells us in verse 27, and a man of the field. And Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac, you know, this is the case a lot of times in the Bible. Man's choice seems to never be God's choice. Isaac loved Esau, and Rebecca loved Jacob. Really a divided family, if you would. One day, Esau came in from the field, and he was hungry. And this tells us a lot about why God made the choice. He understood what Esau's genetics were before Esau was born. He understood probably how Esau would react to various situations. And so Jacob, and the word Jacob means supplanter, and we, I guess, sort of think of that in a negative sense, but it's not necessarily negative, because in this case it comes from God. God intended for Jacob to supplant Esau from the very beginning. Again, I'll repeat, for God's purpose, not for your purpose, not for mine, not for society's purpose, anything but for God's purpose. And after all, he is in control. And Jacob asked Esau. He knew Esau probably had pretty weak character, and he had the food, and he said, "Sell me your birthright." And Esau said, "Okay, what's it worth to me now? I'm hungry." You know, verse 32. So Jacob purchased with some lentils and some bread the birthright. And you know, this is a little like the white man buying Manhattan Island with beads. You know, it seems very unfair, but they made a deal. They made a legal contract here, and then later on, Rebecca and Jacob sort of have to, they think, fool Isaac into passing the birthright on to Jacob. They probably really didn't have to, because God had already made the choice, but nevertheless, as human beings, we try to manipulate things, and Rebecca and Jacob were no different. And Jacob gave Esau bread, I'm 31st verse, and pottage of lentils, and he did drink and rose and went his way, and Esau despised his birthright. Now, if we'll just turn over into the next chapter, and we'll see that Esau despised his birthright. And if we'll look in the 30th verse of chapter 25, where Esau asked for the food, and it was at that point that God changed Esau's name to Edom. It says that in verse 30. Therefore was his name called Edom. So those of us in the Church of God with long tenure remember, know who Jacob became, and that he had 12 sons that actually was the foundation of the nation of Israel. And we understand that, but we really don't think much about Edom from that point on, or Esau. All we can read in Genesis that Esau and Jacob finally sort of settled their differences, and but where's Esau today? Is this struggle between these two brothers still going on today? Well, the Word of God implies that it is. But if we'll take the new name for Esau, you know, Jacob's new name became Israel. Esau's new name became Edom. And so let's just look at the Bible and see what the Bible has to say about Edom. And it has a lot to say. I won't be able to cover it today. And I'm not necessarily taking these prophecies, information that we're gleaning out of the Bible, I'm not necessarily taking them in any time order that they will occur. Some of the things have already happened in the past, but most of them are still futuristic. In chapter 63 of the book of Isaiah, here's a prophecy about God himself dealing with Edom. In fact, God made the statement that he loved Jacob and he hated Esau. I've heard several sermonettes and a sermon or two try to tell me that God didn't really mean what he said. That he didn't really hate. Yeah, he did, because Esau didn't want the birthright. Esau's character wasn't what God wanted. God hated Esau's actions. And there's some typology here that has to do with the birthright and the first resurrection. And again, that's a different subject that we'll talk about at a later time. But there's some typology between the birthright and the right of being born in the first resurrection. And there's some things about Edom that we need to remember. In Isaiah 63, it says, "Who is this who cometh from Edom with dyed garments, Boaz, that is glorious in apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength, that speaks in righteousness and mighty to save?" That could be no one but God, the member of the God family that became Jesus Christ. "Wherefore are you red in your apparel, in your garments, like him that treadeth in the wine vat?" And verse 3 says, "I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me, for I will tread them in my anger, and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments." There it tells you it's not grape juice, it's blood. "And I will stain my raiment. For the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of redeemed has come." It says, "I looked, and there was none to help, and I wondered, and there was none to uphold. Therefore my own arm brought salvation unto me, and my fury has upheld me, and I will tread down the people in my anger." You know, here's God speaking, and a lot of people would listen to that and say, "Well, that's downright unchristian." No, that's one of the reasons that people misunderstand what they call the God of the Old Testament. They don't realize that the God of the Old Testament is the member of the God family that became Jesus Christ, and that he's the same yesterday, today, tomorrow. We read that, but then when it comes to him executing judgment and bringing about justice, we sort of, as human beings, sometimes like to turn our back on it and say, "Well, we wouldn't have done it that way." Well, I'm not going to read all of this, but all this chapter, because God deals with other entities. But there's a reason. Why is God picking on Edom? Why does he single this nation, this group of people out that are Esau's descendants, and why does he do them this way? It says God's not a respecter of persons. Let's look in the book of Ezekiel, because we'll find out that there is a lot of things that God has to say about Edom. In fact, and we'll talk about it later, there is one whole book in the Bible that deals with Edom. One complete book. But that's not the only place. And let's see if we can read this, look at the Bible, put the pieces together, and find out where Edom might be today and what they might be doing. Before we do that, I want to mention the area of what is called Palestine today. Even the nation of Israel is included in that, but there's more than that included. The Palestinians, we hear about the Palestinians all the time, and where the Palestinians live. When I was able to go to Israel, I went into Palestinian territory, and it was an interesting experience. I won't comment a lot more on that, but the way the name Palestine came into being used was simply because the Romans were trying to punish the Jews after 70 A.D., and one of the ways that they thought they could best punish them would be to name the land Palestine after the Philistines as a slam on the Jews. It was. Now, can you think of anything that the Edomites have done that was really, really bad? Well, I can just think of three or four things right off the top of my head. First of all, Doeg the Edomite, if we look back to Samuel's time, and when David was fleeing for his life from Saul, that the priest at Anathoth, Nob, two little twin towns, it's where Jeremiah, in a later generation, came from. It was his hometown. And the priest assisted David in hiding from Saul. They actually gave him Goliath's sword and some bread for his men. I think I mentioned that probably in the last sermon I gave. And so when Saul came along, he ordered his men to kill all the priests in that town. And they wouldn't do it. But Doeg the Edomite did. So here's strike one against the Edomites, although it was just one man that did it. They killed the priests and most of their family. Very, very few escaped. The Bible only records about one that we know of that escaped. Abiathar and Ahimelech, that both served as priests, they were able to escape and survived, and there may have been others, but it just wiped the little town out. And so that's strike one. There's a couple of three other things that we need to remember. That Herod was King Herod that finished up the second temple. He was not Jewish. He was an Edomite. And what did he do? Well, he killed all the male children trying to kill the Messiah. That's a pretty bad thing. He cut John the Baptist's head off, or had it done. And he killed the Apostle James, the brother of John. So that's a pretty good lineup right there. That's just four events that the Bible records, and in this case it was just two Edomites, Doeg and Herod. Let's look in Isaiah 63 and verse 1. Therefore thus says the Eternal God, I will stretch out my hand upon Eden, and I will cut off man and beast from it, and will make it desolate. And I will lay my, in verse 14, I will lay my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel, and they shall do to Edom according to my anger and according to my fury, and they shall know vengeance, says the Lord God. This would have to be a different event that we're reading about in Ezekiel 25 than the event we read about in Isaiah, the 63rd chapter. And then, if we go down to verse 15, we see something begin to develop, and we can sort of bring this down to modern times. At this juncture, we need to stop for a moment, pause, and maybe get a Bible map out and look and see where Edom has been in the past and the territory in the Middle East that they occupied. Strange as it might seem, they still occupy a lot of that territory today, from Beersheba and on down south of Jerusalem, actually all the way to Egypt. That was Edom's territory. And so that might give you a little bit of a hint. It says, thus says the Eternal God, because the Philistines have dealt by revenge and have taken vengeance with a despiteful destroy to destroy it, for the old hatred remember that term, the old hatreds. And because every generation has been raised to hate Jacob's descendants. In fact, my margin here says perpetual hatred. That's really a proper comment. So you see, David and Saul, they had to do continual battle nearly with the Philistines. And the Philistines were within Edom's territory. They were not all of what was Edom by any evidence that I can find, but they were in Edomite territory, and they were co-conspirators with the Edomites. Let's turn over to another book in the Bible, and that's the book of Joel. In the 3rd chapter, Egypt shall be a desolation. I'm breaking it in context here. And we just, in verse 17-18, tells where Jacob's descendants are going to be. Dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain, they shall possess Jerusalem, it shall be holy. But in verse 19, it says, Egypt shall be a desolation. And we can turn back to, I believe it's about Isaiah 19, or very close, where the Bible actually shows status or the situation for Egypt at the beginning of the millennium as you move into the millennium. Again, that's a story in itself. But Egypt shall be desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness. You know, I've been to Egypt, and I've been in Edom's territory. And believe me, Egypt, a lot of it is desolate, except along the Nile River. But Edom's territory is a desolation. And I realize that's not everywhere. But a lot of it that I saw was. The city of Bethlehem is in Edomite territory today, if you'll follow where I'm going. But verse 20, but Judah shall dwell forever in Jerusalem from generation to generation, and I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for the eternal dwelleth in Zion. So that gives you the time frame. It will be after the return of Christ that this takes place, because the eternal, the Messiah, will be dwelling in Jerusalem. Now we can just turn over to the next chapter of the Bible here, and we can, in the book of Amos, and we'll see some more very familiar terminology today. Hear it on the news all the time. Amos chapter 1, verse 6. Thus says the Eternal, for 3 transgressions of Gaza, and for 4. So, you know, that's an interesting way the Bible does things. Sometimes it's like we were thinking about all the bad things they had done, and said, well, there was 3, and then they said, no, there was 4, which implies, in what we read in the Bible, that there was more than that down through time. But that's a way of pointing out that there is significant transgressions enough to require punishment. And it says, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have carried away captive, the whole captive, to deliver them up to Edom. And I will send a fire on the walls of Gaza, and devour the places thereof. And I will cut off the inhabitants of Ashdod, and him that holds the scepter from Ashkelon. And I will turn my hand against Ekron, and the remnant of the Philistines shall perish. In verse 9, thus says the Eternal, for 3 transgression of Tyre, and for 4, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they delivered up the whole captivity to Edom, and remembered not the brotherly covenant. They forgot that they were Jacob's brothers. Now, some modern DNA information will, and a lot of people are very skeptical about that, and you have to, you know, look at it with tongue in cheek, but there is a lot of information there. They say that the Palestinians, modern genetics, says that the Palestinians and the Jews have a direct connection, DNA-wise. Well, that would make sense. They both have the same mama and daddy, Isaac and Rebekah. So that makes pretty good sense. Now, I mentioned that there was one book in the Bible, and I'm not going to read it all today. It's a short book, only has one chapter, but it deals with Edom. It deals with Edom, and that's the book of Obadiah. And it starts off in the vision of Obadiah. Thus says the Eternal God, concerning Edom, I have heard a rumor from the Eternal, and an ambassador is sent among the heathen. Rise you and let us rise up against her in battle. And it goes on, it talks about in verse 3, the pride of their heart. You have exalted yourself as an eagle. You might find out some of these, the nation that's over there that is established, their symbol is an eagle to this day. Of course, a lot of nations use an eagle for a symbol, including the United States, so that really doesn't particularly mean anything. But I'll let you read the book of Obadiah yourself, but let's look in verse 12. But you should not have looked on the day of your brother in the day that he became a stranger, neither should you have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction, neither should you have spoken proudly in the day of distress. You should have not entered the gates of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, you should not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Neither should you have stood in the crosswords to cut off those that did escape. And you know, this may be an event in the future, because we don't have all the information, even historically, of all the things that have happened in to Edom and to Israel, and because mainly what we got is just the biblical record. And if you'll read on, you'll see that even Joseph and Ephraim are involved. And verse 21 then makes a statement again that tells you when this is going to culminate. And saviors shall come upon Mount Zion to judge the Mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Eternal's. Saviors. Again, that's a whole different subject. But there's a very small area that those two nations, Edom, and in this time frame, remnant of the house of Judah, the little nation of Israel today, they're coexisting in a very small area, just like Jacob and Esau were in Rebekah's womb, and they're struggling for supremacy. And Jacob has his hand against Esau's heel, and they're fighting. I've got some grandsons, and they can sort of pick on each other sometimes, but that's natural. But this was an unnatural thing before the boys were born, and it's continued. That continues to this very day. I want to read one other thing. You know, the book of Obadiah really makes a strong case that Edom is the modern day Palestinian people. But here's another point that we need to realize. The word rendered in English as violence in verse 10 is translated from a Hebrew word, chamac, comas. I'll try to make an attempt at pronouncing it. I know it's totally wrong, but it's Strong's number 2554, and it's a root meaning of to be violent by implication, to maltreat, make bare, shake off, violate, do violence, take away violently, wrong, imagine wrongfully. And it's really interesting that this word and the use of this word, and Strong's Concordance, not an absolute authority on Hebrew, but it gives you a ballpark to start looking at the word. You really, the way to come to the understanding of what it really means in the Bible is to look at it all the different places it might be used. But this one is 2554 and 2555. They go together. Violent by implication, wrong by mention, unjust gain, damage, fuse, injustice, oppressor, unrighteous, violent, done against, violent dealings, wrong. That's pretty point blank. And in modern Hebrew, do you know how that word is pronounced? Hamas. This has been James Throgmorton speaking to you for the Churches of God.